Here we are at Cape Girardeau, and this is November the 24th in 2006, and this is an open talk by Bhante Yamala Ramsey.
I thought that today I would talk about the enlightenment factors. There's seven of them. And actually, I kind of expanded a little bit because there's a couple more factors that are real important with the enlightenment factors. And the first is your curiosity. Now, you sit in meditation, which we will do very quickly, and then I'll talk more. But the thing with meditation is not to develop a one-pointed mind that just stays on one thing, but to watch how things come up in your mind. What happens first? What happens after that? What happens after that? So the first real factor is your curiosity. You want to see what happens next. And when you use a beginner's mind, of not having any idea what's going to happen next, and using your curiosity to look at it, that improves your mindfulness quite a bit. Now, mindfulness is developing your observation powers of how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. And there is the investigation enlightenment factor, investigation of the experience, because when something arises, it just doesn't do it one time. It has a tendency, especially with the hindrances, to do it over and over again. So investigating how that happens is an important thing. The next factor is energy. And energy is really tricky when you start getting deeper into your meditation, because you have to learn how to adjust your energy so that you don't have too much energy. If you have too much energy, your mind will start to get restless and start to wobble and move all over the place. If you don't put quite enough in, your mind starts to dull out and then get dreamy. So learning how to tweak your energy is a real important part of the practice. When your energy is just right, then you have joy arise, and we'll discuss this more. And joy is one of the things that I really push a lot, because so many people, when they practice meditation, they get real serious. When your mind is real serious, your mind is heavy. It's not alert. So when I teach meditation, I make it into a smiling meditation. And with the smiling meditation, it helps to uplift your mind so joy arises more easily. Joy is a factor that keeps your mind in balance with your perspective. And we'll talk about more of that after we sit. The next part of the enlightenment factors, way back by mindfulness, is persistence. You have to continually let go and start over again. And you have to be persistent. Just keep doing it over and over again until you learn. After joy, when the joy fades away, and it will, your mind becomes very, very tranquil, very peaceful, very calm, alert. And as your mind becomes more peaceful and calm, your mind becomes more collected, more alert. And collectedness has calmness in it, but it's not such strong calmness that you just stay with one thing. as you develop your meditation, go deeper into your meditation, you'll be able to see different levels of the meditation. And as you go deeper, you'll be able to recognize all of these different levels. And that's the collective mind that does that. The last factor of the enlightenment factors is equanimity. And equanimity is balance of mind no matter what arises. Your mind doesn't wobble, it doesn't get knocked off balance. So that's what I'm going to be talking about tonight. But first, I think I need to give you some instructions in the meditation. Now, I teach two kinds of meditation. I teach mindfulness of breathing meditation, and I teach loving kindness meditation. I like for people to start out with the loving kindness meditation, because when your mind starts to calm down, the progress in your meditation is much faster with loving kindness than it is with any other kind of meditation. In this country, a lot of people are starting their meditation by doing a breath meditation. And I did that for 20 years. But I find that the loving kindness meditation is the better one to start off with. So that's the kind of instructions I'm going to give you tonight. When you practice loving kindness meditation, you first start by sending loving and kind thoughts to yourself. You remember a time when you were happy. And when that happy feeling arises, it's a nice, glowing, warm feeling in the center of your chest. As soon as that feeling arises, let go of the memory, keep the feeling, and then make a wish for your own happiness. May I be happy. May I be peaceful and calm. May I be filled with joy. May my mind be clear and alert. Whatever wish you make for yourself, feel that wish. You know what it feels like to be peaceful and calm. You know what it feels like to be joyful. You know what it feels like to have a clear, alert mind. Okay, as soon as you make that wish and you feel that in your mind, then put that feeling right in the middle of that glowing feeling in the center of your chest. And radiate that feeling to yourself. Or you don't have to make the wish over and over again. May I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy, like that. Make the wish one time. Feel that wish. Stay with that feeling as long as it's there and radiate that warm feeling to yourself. While you're doing this, your mind is going to wander. You will have thoughts that come up. Thoughts are not your enemy. Thoughts are just thoughts, and it's okay for thoughts to arise. It has to be okay because that's the truth. When they arise, they're there. What you want to do is notice that your mind has gotten distracted by the thought. Let go of the thought. Now you let go of the thought by not paying attention to it anymore. Just let it be there. Let it think itself. It's okay. Now relax the tension and tightness caused by that mind's movement. And quite often the tension and tightness is in your head, but it can also be in different parts of your body. Like you're sitting and all of a sudden you feel like a cough is coming on. You feel a little tickle in your throat. What happens when that happens? Your mind immediately goes to that and it says, I don't want to cough now. I don't want to disturb anybody. And all of the muscles in your throat contract. And the more you don't want that feeling to be there, the more it's there, until finally you cough. But what you do is relax. Relax the muscles around that feeling. Relax any tightness that you feel in your body. There's almost always tightness in your head. Relax. feel that tension, let go. It's like a flower opening up. And you'll feel an expansion feeling in your head when you do that. And as you relax, you'll see that your mind is very alert at that time. There's no thoughts in your mind at all. Now bring that mind back to the feeling of loving kindness, and then make another wish for your own happiness. If you have, we're going to sit for half an hour. There's a clock there. Okay, I can see it. If you sit for a half an hour and your mind wanders 50 times in that half an hour, and you see it 50 times, and you let it go and relax and come back to the loving kindness, that is a good meditation. When you get carried away by the thoughts and you think that's more important than anything else, now you're not meditating anymore, you're thinking. Now, there can be times when your mind has some real interesting thoughts come up and you want to remember those thoughts. You want to have them come up later. Right now, you let it go, but you put a red flag on it mentally. Say, you can come up later and I'll think about you later. And it will. But let it go for right now. Now, when you're sitting in meditation, please sit comfortably. Sit with your back reasonably straight, not over straight. Over straight causes tension. You want your vertebrae to be one on top of the other. Don't move your body. Don't wiggle your toes, don't wiggle your fingers, don't scratch, don't rub, don't change your posture, don't rock back and forth. While you're sitting like this, there can be some sensations that arise in your body. I was talking a little bit ago about a cough, or a want to sneeze, or an itch, or heat, or vibration, or pain. Any of these kind of sensations can arise. As soon as you notice that your mind has gone to that sensation, the first thing you'll notice is that your mind starts thinking thoughts about that sensation. I wish it would stop. Why does it have to bother me now? I don't like that feeling. I want it to go away. Every thought about the pain makes the pain bigger and more intense. So the first thing you need to do is let go of the thought and relax. Now you'll notice there's a tight mental fist around that sensation. That's aversion. You don't really want it to be there. But the truth of the present moment is that when a sensation arises, it's there. And it's okay for that sensation to be there. It has to be okay because that's the truth. It's there. Anytime you try to fight with the truth, anytime you try to control the truth, anytime you try to make the truth be the way you want it to be, you're fighting with reality. And that leads to more and more pain and suffering. So, as soon as you notice that there's this tight mental fist around the sensation, let it go. It's okay for that sensation to be there, but it's an itch and I don't like it. Okay, so what? Let it be there. It's only an itch. And it's not even your itch. You didn't ask it to come up. It came up by itself. So it's not yours even. So you relax, you let go and allow that sensation to be there and relax the tension and tightness caused by mind's movement. And now come back to the feeling of loving kindness and making a wish for your own happiness. the nature of these kind of sensations is they don't go away right away. So it's going to come up again. And then you get to watch the whole process again. All of the thoughts about why you don't like it, let go of the thoughts, relax. Let that sensation be there. Let go of that tight mental fist and relax. Bring that relaxed mind back to the feeling of loving kindness and making a wish for your own happiness. Now, after a while, one of two things is going to happen with that sensation. Either it's going to go away, or it's not. Either way is all right. You're not doing this to be controlling of any sensation. If it goes away, fine, it won't distract your mind, and you'll be able to come back to your object of meditation and stay there. If it doesn't go away, you start developing a balance in your mind about it, and then eventually it'll stop pulling your attention to it. And then you can continue on meditating. The more interest you have in staying with the feeling of loving kindness and making a wish for your own happiness, the more interest you have, the less likely you will get dull, get sleepy, get bored, any of those. So having strong interest in doing this is a very important part of the meditation. Now, after about 10 minutes, then you start sending loving and kind thoughts to a spiritual friend. A spiritual friend is someone of the same sex, and they are alive. That's the only two requirements. A spiritual friend is someone that when you think of them and their good qualities, you really appreciate them. You have a lot of respect for them. You truly do wish them well. To start off with, it's better not to use a member of your family. It's better to have a little bit more distance. If you're living with members of your family and you want to start sending loving and kind thoughts to them, and then they do something during the day that you didn't like, and you sit down and start doing your meditation, that turns into a hate meditation. So if you're not quite as close as a family member, that doesn't mean you won't radiate loving kindness to a family member sometime in the future. But for the starting period, pick somebody that has a little bit more distance than that. But somebody that's very easy for you to bring up into your mind. Because you like them and you really do wish them well. So you're sending loving and kind thoughts to yourself. May I be happy. May my mind be peaceful and calm. As I feel this peace and calm, I wish that for you. May you be peaceful and calm. And then take your spiritual friend and put them right in the middle of that glowing feeling and give them a heart hug. Now remember, every time you make a wish, you want to feel that wish and put that in your heart and surround your friend with that feeling. While you're doing that, you also want to picture your friend in your mind's eye. Now for some people, visualizing is very easy, and for other people it's not. For some people, you can close your eyes and you can see that person just perfectly. And for other people, they close their eyes and it's more of a mental image with words about that person. You can do that either way. But when you start sending loving and kind thoughts to your spiritual friend, and it's the same spiritual friend every sitting, for the whole sitting, the whole rest of the sitting, You want to picture your spiritual friend with a smile on their face. You want to see them happy and smiling. This is a smiling meditation. You want to smile with your mind. You want to smile with your eyes, even though while you're sitting you close your eyes. That lets go of a lot of tension. You want to put a little smile on your lips. I don't know if you've noticed a Buddha image. He always has this little smile. That's the kind of smile to use. And a smile in your heart. Smiling is a very important aspect of this meditation, because when you're smiling, your awareness of thoughts and feelings other than smiling feelings is much sharper. You're more alert. So the smile is a real important aspect of the meditation. And the more you can smile, the more uplifted your mind becomes. Now, it doesn't matter what kind of distraction arises and pulls your mind to it. It can be a sound of cars or motorcycles going out on the street. It can be a feeling of a bug walking on you. It can be any kind of a feeling that would distract your mind. You treat all distractions in the same way. You notice that your mind has gone to it. If there's thoughts, let the thoughts go and relax. Now notice the tight mental fist around that and relax. It's okay that this ant is walking on you. It doesn't matter. Relax, smile, come back to the feeling of loving kindness and making a wish for your own happiness. You can't be critical of yourself. Don't be telling yourself that you're supposed to do this better than what you're doing. Okay? If you find yourself being critical of yourself, you're actually indulging in a form of hatred. And this meditation is the opposite of that. This is a practice of, okay, let's start over again. Let's do it again. It's okay. Doesn't matter if your mind gets distracted and you think of something and you're gone for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes. As soon as you recognize that your mind has gone away, as soon as you recognize it, just let it go and relax and come back. Don't criticize. Okay? So now we're going to sit for half an hour. The first 10 minutes we sit sending loving and kind thoughts to ourselves, and the rest of the time sending loving and kind thoughts to your spiritual friend. And literally put a smile on your lips. Okay, now gently let go of the meditation and open up your eyes whenever you're ready. The 7 factors of enlightenment are supporting factors that happen in your mind, and they teach you how mind and mind's attention moves from one thing to another. If you've done any meditation before, this is going to sound quite a bit different than anything you've run across, because this is very precise in showing you exactly how mind works. And once you start seeing how mind works, things get real interesting. And you start seeing, when sadness comes up, or depression comes up, or anxiety comes up, or fear, or any whatever the catch of the day is, you'll be able to recognize it for what it is. It's just this feeling. And it's okay to have that feeling. This is one of the main problems with people that have depression. A feeling arises, and they don't like that feeling. It's a painful feeling. They don't want it to be there. And then they start thinking about the feeling. Now, if you see what the instructions in the meditation are, is if you start thinking about a feeling, the feeling gets bigger and more intense. So that's what happens. The more you try to think a feeling and control a feeling with your thoughts, the bigger and more intense that feeling becomes. And then the more thoughts there are, the more pain there is. The more you start indulging in identifying with that feeling as being yours personally. Now let's say that you get up in the middle of the night and you have to go to the bathroom, but you don't want to turn the lights on, so you start walking through the room and there's something that's not where it should be, and you wind up stubbing your toe. Now, did you ask that pain to arise? Why did that pain arise? Because your toe hit something that was hard. It isn't your pain. It's just this arises because the conditions are right for it to be there. What you do with what arises in the present moment dictates what happens in the future. If you get mad and you start cursing and you start hopping around and wishing that that pain would go away, that pain actually gets bigger and more intense. If, on the other hand, you start to realize that when pain arises in your mind or in your body, that it's there to show you that you need to soften. You need to allow that sensation to be there. You need to allow that emotion to be there without trying to control it. And when pain arises, that's where you send your love. Because that's what your body is telling you. You stub your toe and that pain arises, your toe is looking back at you and saying, "I hurt. Give me some love." But what you're doing, actually, when you're mad that you stub your toe, is instead of giving that toe love, you're giving it anger, you're giving it hatred, you're giving it dislike. Now, what happens in your body when that happens? We have the pineal gland. It's a gland in the head. It's in between the two lobes of the brain. Now, when there's anger, what happens is it closes down the blood vessels to the pineal gland. The pineal gland is where the endorphins are produced. Endorphins are the natural painkiller in the body. They're about 10 times stronger than morphine. So the blood vessels close down and the endorphins stay where they are. So the pain really gets more intense. But when you see that you're doing that and you let go and you relax and you start sending love into that area, the blood vessels open up. The endorphins get into your blood. They go to the pain that is distressing. And all of a sudden, you start feeling better. And then you stop hobbling around and you go do what you're going to do. And you wake up the next morning and you look at your toe and it's got a bruise on it, or it's got some blood on it, or whatever. And you go, well, what happened there? Oh, I remember, I stubbed my toe. So when you're practicing loving acceptance of the present moment, which is what I'm teaching you right now, you learn to allow the sensation to be there without resistance in your mind. It's okay for that sensation to be there. It has to be, because that's the truth. As you allow that sensation to be there, and you start sending love into that sensation, what are you practicing at that time? You're practicing all of the enlightenment factors. You're practicing your mindfulness. You observe what mind is doing in the present moment with whatever arises. You're observing how mind grabs onto that and squeezes because it's a painful feeling, and I don't want that painful feeling. I want to be happy all the time. But the truth is, can't be. Depends on conditions. So as soon as you say, okay, that pain is there, okay, let it be there. Don't try to control it with your thoughts. You let go of all of your thoughts about it. You allow the feeling to be there, and then you start sending love into that spot. And in a minute or two, it really doesn't take very long, then that painkiller is released, it goes into that, and then you stop worrying about it. You stop thinking about it so much. You get to go do other things. I used to be a carpenter, and every now and then I would miss and hit a finger. And it hurt. And as soon as that would happen, I'd go, wow, that really hurt, and I'd start sending love into it and go back to work. And somebody'd see me do it and they'd say, oh, it must have been a little one. And I come back the next day and the whole nail is black and blue. And they're going, wow, you really hurt yourself. I said, no big deal. This stuff works. It's immediately effective. That's one of the things that the Buddha teaches us with practicing the Buddha's path, that this is immediately effective. Now, I tried many forms of meditation before. And some meditations, it would take 5 years to learn what the meditation wasn't before you learned what the meditation was. This method is not like that. This method is tried and true. It's been around for 2,500 years. It works. It wouldn't last that long if it didn't. As you learn to be observant in how your mind attention moves from one thing to another, it goes to your toe when you stub your toe. Then you notice the thoughts coming in and the dissatisfaction thoughts. And then if your mindfulness is alert enough, you go, oh, we don't want to put hate into that. We want to put love into that. And you start letting go of those thoughts and you relax your mind. When you relax that tension caused by the thoughts and that action of stubbing your toe, then your mindfulness is very alert. You're able to investigate how mind moved, how it went from being very happy, having this pain come up, going to dissatisfaction thoughts. And you start balancing your energy of the dislike of that sensation, and you start relaxing into that. When you do that, you feel a sense of relief. And when you feel that relief, joy starts to come up. Right after joy, it'll be there for a little while. That relief will just be there for a little while. And then your mind becomes calm, becomes tranquil, still incredibly alert, but peaceful, very much at ease. And your mind is collected. It's come together, and you're able to watch without aversion in your mind. You're able to watch without dissatisfaction in your mind. You're able to see with a collected mind how your mind is and how it works. And when you do that, you start to get a sense of balance. You get the equanimity. Now, we just went through all of the enlightenment factors with a simple stubbing your toe. And it doesn't matter whether it's a physical pain or an emotional pain. Somebody comes up to you and they say something you don't like. What happens in your mind? What happens in your body? What happens with your thoughts? Heavy. So, what's the easiest way? Well, let's go a little bit further. When that dissatisfaction arises, whose dissatisfaction is it? Whose dislike is it? Who wants it to be different than it is? Me. I don't like this. I want it to be different than it is. The identification with your thoughts and feelings when they arise, the taking it personally, is that tension and tightness and pulling your mind down. And then you start reacting the way you always react when this particular thing arises. You start, somebody says something you don't like, it causes dissatisfaction, dislike, sadness, anxiety, whatever the catch is. And then your mind says, no, I don't like that. And then you start giving that dissatisfaction back. That's reacting the way you always act when this kind of particular situation arises. Now, let's dissect this a little bit. What happens when somebody comes and they say to you something that's not nice, that you don't like? A feeling of pain arises. Now, feeling is of three kinds. You have a painful feeling, you have a pleasant feeling, you have a neither painful nor pleasant feeling. Let's just work with the first two, painful and pleasant. Somebody says something you don't like, a painful feeling arises. Right after that painful feeling arises, there's tension and tightness that arises in your mind and in your body. Now, this tension and tightness is what the Buddha called craving. And craving always manifests as tension and tightness in your mind and in your body. Right after that tension and tightness arises, then there's clinging. Now, clinging is all of your thoughts, all of your concepts, all of your ideas, all of your stories about why you like or dislike that feeling when it arose. Right after the clinging, then you have your habitual tendency. Every time this kind of feeling arises, I always act in that way. Now, when you start working with the enlightenment factors and you start investigating how this works, not why, we don't care about why with Buddhism, we care about how. How did this whole process come up? A feeling arose, then the craving arose. I don't like it. Now that's the first part of the identification that this feeling is mine. Now you didn't ask this feeling to come up. The feeling came up because the conditions were right for it to arise, just like with stubbing your toe. And then all of the thoughts, all of the concepts, all of the ideas about why you didn't like that, and then your habitual tendency of acting in this way when this kind of situation arises. So when you're practicing looking at how this process works and how you get caught in and become attached to the feeling and trying to control the feeling with your thoughts, this is what we need to look at. This is what we need to start investigating. How did this arise? That's not an easy thing to do. But when you're sitting in meditation, you can watch things a little bit more closely because you don't have external distraction. With your daily life, it's a little bit harder to see this process. The fastest way to let go of painful dissatisfaction, identification feelings, thoughts and feelings, is to laugh with your mind at how dumb it is for getting caught by something like this. When you can laugh with yourself for being angry, you're not angry anymore. It goes from, I'm mad and I don't like this, to, oh, it's only this anger. No big deal. It's not even my anger. It's just anger. Now you see the difference in that. One of them pulls your mind down. And you get caught, and you can stay angry for weeks on end because of that attachment. Or you can laugh at how crazy your mind is for getting caught by that. Welcome to the human race. We're all crazy. You let go of it when you laugh, and then you go from I am angry to it's only this anger, and it's not even mine. It's just anger. It's nothing. Let it go. As you do that, you've changed your perspective. You've changed the way you view the world. You stop reacting the way you always act when this kind of situation arises, and now you're starting to respond with a mind that's clear, that's not attached, with a mind that just says, this is nothing. Why do I want to spend my time getting angry about this? Look at how you cause your own pain when your mind gets heavy, when your mind gets hard. And look at the times that your mind has the repeat thoughts in it. Every time you have repeat thoughts, there's an attachment. Who's attached? I am. Who doesn't like this situation? I don't. Who wants it to be different than it is? I do. I don't like this stuff. All of that I identification is seeing what's arising in the present moment in the wrong way. And it pulls your mind down, and it causes pain to arise. So anytime you see that you're having repeat thoughts, and when repeat thoughts happen, it's just like they were on a tape deck. They always happen in the same way, in the same order, with the same emphasis. And when you recognize that and you start to laugh at how crazy your mind is for grabbing onto that, then you can let it go. When you let it go, relief. Right after relief, joy. Right after joy, peaceful and calm. So when you're practicing like this, the whole thing is to watch what your mind is doing in the present moment as much as you can. Now, this is not just a sitting practice. This is an all-the-time practice. Now, I told you earlier that I teach people that it's best to smile. And smile as much as you can remember to smile. When you're walking from here to there, what are you doing with your mind? What is your face doing? Do you notice an awful lot of people walking around, they got these deep lines like this? Wonder what they're thinking? Are they thinking happy thoughts? See? The more you can smile and laugh during the day and then give that away, give it to other people as much as you can remember to do it, your mind starts to develop a new habit of looking at the world. Somebody can come up and read the riot act to you, and you can smile and you can wish them happiness while they're doing it, and there's no fight. Because it takes two to fight. If there's only one that wants to fight and the other one doesn't fight, that fight goes away pretty quick. Then you can find out what the real problem is. The more you can practice smiling with your daily activities, the lighter you can keep your mind with your daily activities, the more alert your mind becomes, the more uplifted your mind becomes. And it's real easy to see when your mind starts getting heavy. So the more you can practice smiling, and I mean smiling with your eyes, smiling with your mind, smiling with your mouth, smiling in your heart, the more you can practice smiling, the more alert your mindfulness becomes. The more you'll see how to balance your energy with whatever you're doing. You'll learn how to investigate how your mind is doing and what it's doing right now. And the investigation kind of works like this. I was going along and I was doing great and I was happy and all of a sudden I'm not. Well, what's that? Let's let that go. I want to be practice being happy. And it does take practice because we have a lot of old habitual tendencies. My mind is critical. My mind is heavy. And we've, over our lifetime, we've developed that. As we can start recognizing that our mind says, I don't like this. I don't want it to be like that. And laugh. And then you go, oh. Well, it's only this desire, so what? What's that? The more you can practice that, the more your mind tends towards being content. And with a content mind, which means happy, by the way, there's more balance in your life. As you practice this over and over again, you start noticing that the high highs and the low lows aren't so big anymore. After a while, it's more like little waves in the ocean, just like that. So you're not going to have the ecstatic highs, but you're also not going to have the depressing lows. And as you practice more and more, you get more of a sense of balance, so that when things arise and somebody comes at you with their anger, you start realizing, I don't have to take that anger and make it mine and then throw it back at them. They can throw all the anger they want at me, and I can stay there with a balanced mind. And with that balance comes enlightenment. Enlightenment is kind of a strange word, because if I tell you something that you didn't know before, I've enlightened you. So let's change the factors of enlightenment to the factors of awakening. Because you awake yourself to your old habitual tendencies, and how when this kind of situation arises, I always act that way, and I'm sad for I don't know how long. And I don't need to do that to myself. We cause our own suffering. Nothing out there causes our suffering. We cause it to ourselves. And we cause it by the choices that we make. Either we make a conscious choice or we make an unconscious choice. Our unconscious choice is to take everything personally and like and dislike and criticize and try to control. A conscious choice is allowing these thoughts and these feelings to be there without getting involved in them and relaxing into them. Now, an interesting thing that happens, every time you relax, you're letting go of craving. And what is craving? Craving is the I like it, I don't like it mind. When you let go of that mind, there's clarity. There's no thoughts. There's just this clear observation of the present moment. And then you direct your mind to a wholesome thing, being happy, smiling, wishing somebody else well, putting love into situations. And the more you can do that, the easier life becomes. Now, somebody came to me not too long ago and they said, are you a magician? And they were being serious. And I said, yeah, sure, everybody is. And they were very much involved in being Christian, and they thought that I was being some kind of sorcerer of some sort. And I said, you know, it's real magic. Every time you direct your mind towards being happy. And all kinds of wonderful things start happening for you when you do that. So you're a magician too. Everybody is. It's okay to be a magician. It's okay to watch the magic happen. As you start developing a mind that's more uplifted and happy, you start seeing so many wonderful things starting to happen that it's phenomenal. I've seen all kinds of healing occur as I develop my own mind to be uplifted Now, I used to go and visit hospitals quite often. And they wouldn't call a monk into the hospital until somebody was really, really sick. Now, I went into the hospital to visit this one man. He was in a coma. And right after I got done spending time with him, somebody came up and said, "Can you come and visit my mother? She just had an operation. She had her stomach taken out. She has stomach cancer. She's still in the recovery room." So how can I say no to something like that? Of course I'll go see you. So I went in, and she was wearing an oxygen mask, but it was a clear mask. You can see her mouth and all of that. And I had a student was with me, and we went in, and I closed my eyes, and I started wishing that person well, and started sending as much love into the situation as possible. And after a few minutes, the student starts tapping me and saying, "Look at that." Now, this lady was under anesthesia. She was knocked out. And I opened up my eyes, and I looked at her, and she had this great big smile on her face. Wow. Far out. That was great. That was a miracle. Now, you say, the world is really a nasty place, and it's not a place that I want to spend any more time with because there's so much negativity around. Do you want the world to change? Then change. One of the things that the Buddha teaches about meditation is there's three different aspects to the meditation. The first is learning how to practice your generosity. This doesn't mean you're giving money to someone. It doesn't mean you're giving physical stuff to someone. There's three kinds of generosity: with your thoughts, with your speech, with your actions. You say something to make somebody else smile. You're changing the world around you in a positive way. You radiate kind, loving thoughts into a situation. Have you ever walked into a room where somebody's depressed and you feel like turning around and walking out right away? Stay there and start wishing that person happiness and start smiling. What happens? Their mind goes from being real low and heavy, and it starts coming up to meet the level of your mind. And then they feel relief. You want to affect the world around you? Be happy. Smile. Have joy with you as much as you can remember, and give that joy away. Give it away as much as you can remember to do it. Again, you can't be critical of yourself when you forget, or when you get caught and you have an emotional state arise. Okay, you got caught. You had an emotional state arise. It happens. Old habits are hard to let go of. It's okay. Now you're aware of what you're doing in the present moment. Change. And start bringing up that happy feeling, bringing up that joy. Laughing. Having fun. I know that this is really an unusual thing, because an awful lot of people have the idea that meditation is supposed to be serious stuff. But if you want it to be serious, then be seriously happy. There's no need to have a heavy mind. As you keep your mind light, your mindfulness is more alert. You're more able to see clearly what's happening in the present moment. And when your mind starts to get heavy, then you can let go of that and start over again. With practice, people will start to come up to you and say things like, you're different. What are you doing that's different? I want some of that. Tell me. That used to happen all the time when I was in Asia. I had people that would come and they'd do a one-week retreat. And after that 1 week, they'd go back to work, and all of the people they were working with, they were starting to see this person smile, and they started having uplifting speech, and they started feeling more and more comfortable. And as they felt more comfortable, everybody around them felt more comfortable. And then people are starting to go to them and say, what are you doing? What's different? Teach me. Let me know. I want some of that. It takes practice. As you practice and get better at learning how to smile in the situations and learning how to be happy and having fun, then the heaviness of the greed, the dissatisfaction, and the delusion start fading away. Now, this is called the three poisons. Greed, hatred, delusion. What's delusion? Do you know? Delusion is taking these greeds and dislikes and making them personal. Delusion is grabbing on with your mind, with that craving mind. I like it, I don't like it mind. And then all of the thoughts that surround that I like it, I don't like it, your concepts and ideas and the stories and everything that goes along with it. That's where you start identifying with, these are my thoughts, this is my feeling, this is the way I feel about it, and this is how you cause yourself suffering. So when you let go of the delusion, you start laughing, you start having fun. Instead of being serious, then you're opening up the possibility to change the world around you in a positive way. Anytime your mind is serious, it's heavy. Anytime it's heavy, there's craving and there's clinging. What this practice is all about is learning how to have a happy, uplifted mind that leads to more happiness in the future, not only for you, but for everybody else around you. So, the more you smile, the more you have fun, the more you laugh, the more uplifted your mind is, the better your mindfulness is, the sharper your investigation, the better your energy is. Joy comes up a lot more often. You feel peaceful and calm. You feel very collected and at ease and balanced. And that's how you become awake. When you're not awake is when something happens that you don't like and you start taking it personally. And you get caught in the feeling of dissatisfaction, and you get caught in all of the thoughts about why did it have to happen this way, why didn't it happen the other way. And as you do that, you cause yourself more and more pain and suffering. Now, not too long ago, one of my very close friends from Malaysia, Dr. K. Sri Damananda, he was the abbot of the biggest monastery in Malaysia for the Theravadins. He invited me to come and stay at his monastery, and I lived with him for 2 years. Every day, it didn't matter what happened, every day at 9 o'clock, I was down in his room and we laughed solid for a half an hour. had no idea what we were laughing at most of the time. I mean, it was just dumb stuff. But what a great way to start the day, you know? He just died. He was old. And it's a great loss. But I'm not sad because he died. Because every time I think of him, yeah, I think of the time we had together and how we laughed together. So my mind doesn't get pulled down by the sadness. It just brings up a memory that was really good, and it was great fun, and we got along famously for 2 years because we had fun together. Any kind of relationship that doesn't have laughing in it and having fun in it and a lot of smiles and a lot of wishes for happiness, it's not worth being in that relationship. If it doesn't have that, it's no fun. Doesn't matter. Let it go. Have fun. It's all right. A lot of times I'm finding in the West especially is that people need permission to do some things. I give you permission to have as much fun as you possibly can. And do it often. And it doesn't matter if it's with a stranger or not. I mean, you stand in line and you watch that cashier and how hassled a cashier is. And when you get up and it's time for your turn to get checked out, you give them something to smile with and something to laugh about, and they're going to all of a sudden very much appreciate that you're there and you're affecting the world around you in a positive way. And the person that's behind you benefits from what you've done with this other person. So the more we can practice this, the better the world becomes. Okay, I've been talking for a while. Does anybody have any questions? Pregnant silence. It's a tricky thing because in the West in particular, because of the psychology that's happening, everybody says feelings and automatically they're going to emotional upsets. And feeling in Buddhism is not that. It's in one discourse the Buddha talked about 5 different kinds of feeling. You have painful physical feeling. You have pleasant physical feeling. You have painful emotional feeling. You have pleasant emotional feeling. And you have equanimity. Now, feeling is just feeling. That's all it is. It's either pleasant or painful. It doesn't matter whether it's physical or emotional. You treat feeling in the same way all the time. Because as soon as feeling arises, the craving arises. And that's the I like it, I don't like it mind. And as soon as the craving arises, then right on its tail is the clinging. All of the thoughts about why you like or don't like it, why you want it to be this way or be different than it is. And then your habitual tendency. You always act this way when this happens. The weak link in all of this is the craving. And the reason that it's the weak link is because you can see the tension arise in your mind and in your body. You can feel your body tighten up. And as soon as you feel that, if you let go right then the thoughts about it and the habitual tendency won't arise anymore. And your mind is clear, your mind is alert, your mind is ready for what else is. So you take that mind and you put love with it. You put acceptance with it. You put a smile with it. You put joy with it. And that doesn't mean that that feeling is going to go away right away. It'll come up again. Okay, good. You get a chance to do it again. I don't care if it comes up every 2 seconds for the next hour. Good. You get to do it again. Eventually what happens is that feeling that had so much push behind it and so much attachment to it, because there's no thoughts pushing against it, trying to control it, there's only this openness and clarity of mind, that feeling starts to get weaker and weaker, and then finally doesn't even arise anymore. What happens then? Relief. Why do you feel relief? Because you saw that that feeling was not yours personally. It was just a feeling. And the relief comes when you let go of the identification with it. Right after that relief, you have joy arise. You're going to smile. Can't help it. You're going to smile. And with that, after that joy is there for a little while, it fades away, because nothing is permanent. Everything's in a state of change. I've got a funny story about Japan in that. But what happens is, right after the joy arises and is there for a little while, you feel very calm. You feel really super alert, peaceful, very collected, and you feel balanced. That's all of the enlightenment factors. So the more you practice smiling and being happy with your daily activities, with what you're doing all the time, the easier it is to do your sitting practice. And the easier your sitting practice is, the easier it is to do it all the time. It's all interconnected. But that's why I say this is not just about sitting in meditation and going deep into some kind of state of meditation. It will happen. Very naturally, you'll start to go deeper into the states of meditation, and you go through what the Buddha called jhanas, which are just this stage of meditation, you're going to experience this. This stage of meditation, you're going to experience this. And it goes through different stages like that. That way you can tell what stages you're at, where you are in your meditation, but where you are in your meditation is how well you understand this process as it works. How well you can see and let go of the identification with all of these thoughts and feelings when they arise. You can go incredibly quickly into very, very deep meditation with this meditation. I've seen it happen. So fast that I wanted to smack them in the back of the head because it's too fast. It's not too fast for them. They understood. They let go of all of the preconceived ideas of what meditation is supposed to be, and they followed the directions in the meditation exactly. Now, these are not my directions. These are not my instructions in the meditation. I've studied Buddhism for 30, however many years. And I've been very serious about my studies. And this is the instructions that the Buddha gives. And this agrees with all of the suttas of practice in this way, and you will see that this is immediately effective, and it will make you enthusiastic to do more, to affect the world around you in a more positive way. And the heck, the thing is, meditation for so long, it's been thought to be a very serious thing that you really have to put out and you have to try very hard. And people have been using the energy and awakening factor in the wrong way. And they've been putting too much energy into their practice. And their practice has always been sitting on the cushion. But they haven't been able to take what they learned on the cushion and put it into your life. So what I'm saying is, don't try so hard while you're on the cushion, and take everything with you. Smile. Have fun. Be happy. The more you can do that, the lighter your mind becomes. The more alert your mind becomes, the easier all life becomes. And that's what we're all looking for, right? And as you do that more and more, you start finding out that all sorts of wonderful things start happening for you. As you give your happiness away, more happiness comes back in all kinds of ways. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Then let's share some merit. May suffering ones be suffering free, and the fear struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief, and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we've thus acquired for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddha's dispensation.